This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering the last final two chapters of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. The Lost Prophecy and what is the last one called? Oh, The Second War Begins.
Oh.
I was getting that confused with and what is the name of the last chapter in Goblet of Fire?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
I thought that was The Second War Begins, but no.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so we are back, and I don't know. Again, it's been a rough day for me because I've just been bedridden with PMS cramps, and it sucks.
It is. That does suck. That does suck very much. It does suck very much. I don't know. I could complain about work some more, but...
Yeah, and we just spent the last 50 minutes complaining about inflation and the state of the world.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
But, again, the whole point of this exercise is to get a little bit of escapism. But yes. pretty depressing chapter with Dumbledore. What was your, okay, I guess, first thoughts regarding the info dump of Dumbledore and this chapter 37?
I mean, that's exactly what it felt like, which, so like everything, almost everything that there was a question on, I think, throughout this book, it was just like, I guess I should have known. Dumbledore was going to show up toward the end and just explain it all. Dumbledore explains it all, like Clarissa explains it all, show from my childhood. So yeah, I mean, a lot of interesting information. I think there was a big reveal with the Voldemort Harry kind of connection. But yeah, and then it kind of made the last chapter just kind of like, I mean, okay. So this one was so much information and some good threats made in the last chapter. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So yeah, chapter 37, The Lost Prophecy, is Harry immediately, you know, we're picking up from Harry grabs the portkey in the ministry and the portkey has dropped him off in the middle of Dumbledore's office.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. And so all of like the headmistress and headmasters and headmistress portraits, like they're snoozing and they're just like, oh, you're back. Does that mean Dumbledore's coming back? Because as we know, the headmaster's like office had sealed itself and it wouldn't let Umbridge in.
Right, right. I forgot about that.
They're all by their lonesomes.
Yeah. Yeah, and Harry's just like kind of grappling with his feelings too. And yeah, I just felt like this was like Harry getting kind of like deep in this.
Yeah. Yeah, him feeling the guilt that it's his fault that Sirius has died and that if he had only opened his mind to the possibility that Voldemort was, as Hermione had said, banking on Harry's love of playing the hero. Which, he already knew that. I guess it was a sense of, you know, Harry... I guess it was the sense of, you know, it wasn't so much a question of whether or not Sirius was there. It was just the question of, would Harry go and save him, which Voldemort... it would have been like, of course, and Harry's like, yes I would. But again, it's complicated because it's, you know, again, he wasn't properly explained by the adults,
right,
about the fluctuating nature of his connection with Voldemort and how that possibly could be manipulated to not just express reality.
Yeah, and I mean, to Dumbledore's credit, he kind of takes ownership of some of those things, like, you know, he, I think that's kind of big of him. He's like, okay, I screwed up. And this is how, you know, I screwed up. Yeah. Of course, he has his reasons, but he realizes there was a flaw in his logic.
Yeah. And also, again, for Harry's love of playing the hero, he did take Hermione's advice to check Grimmauld Place to see if Sirius was there. And as we'll get to that reveal and how you felt about it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So Harry's just, you know, wandering about, and then Dumbledore, like, because I think he just, you know, was only going to give Fudge like 30 minutes, and now he's back.
Yeah.
And, well, Harry said, Dumbledore, you will be pleased to hear that none of your fellow students are going to suffer lasting damage from the night's events. Which is good, because as we knew, like, Hermione had just been out cold by some crazy psychedelic shit that she was hit with by Dolohov.
Right. And we have also learned, like, nobody, I mean, in this world, you know, anybody's guess who's gonna die. So.
Yep. And then Tonks is okay, because Tonks got knocked unconscious, I think, by Bellatrix.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
which, gosh. If you remember the family tree, Bellatrix is Tonks's maternal aunt.
Oh, yeah. I kind of remember they were connected somehow. Bellatrix, I had a whole conversation with my 10-year-old niece yesterday about Bellatrix and how crazy she was. So it was pretty great.
Pretty dope.
Yeah, we were hating on Bellatrix together.
And the worst possible thing Dumbledore can say, I know how you are feeling, Harry.
Oh my god, and then we get Caps Lock Harry again. He's like flipping out. Like, oh my god.
And Phineas Nigelis is like, you see, Dumbledore, never try to understand the students. They hate it. They would much rather be tragically misunderstood, wallow in self-pity, stew in their own. That's enough, Phineas, said Dumbledore.
I mean, I have talked to some people that it's like, you know, when you're having a moment and they're like, you know, oh, I understand where you're coming from. And you, like, some people just don't want to hear that in that moment. And Harry's definitely one of those people. He doesn't want to hear, like...
You know, I feel like it goes a long way if, again, if someone's having a moment and you said, do you want comfort or advice? Like, just out of the gate, just ask that. Do you want comfort or advice?
That is the key. Yes, that is the key. It's hard to remember in the moment. I don't know, but
yes, that is the key. Because I feel like I've been in situations where I've been like, oh, I've gone through something like that. This and this happened to me. And I feel like, especially like when I was in high school, like in my younger years, I felt like some people interpreted that as me trying to like direct the conversation to myself and be like selfish or like egotistical. And it's like, no, I'm trying to like, you know, connect the dots that there's a connection.
Right, right. Just kind of like this. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, I get that very much. Well, Harry just starts, I mean, I guess it's another kind of indicator of how emotionally distraught Harry is, because like, is Dumbledore a person that he would typically like scream at? No.
And even again, we know very little of like Dumbledore's past and like his family step, so we don't know exactly if, you know, even if Dumbledore has faced loss, we don't know if it can be equated to the severity and all the stuff that's been put on Harry. And on top of that, he's lost his, you know, the one parental figure he has. Although he does have more than one parental figure. He still has Remus Lupin, but he never seemed to give Remus the same status as Sirius.
Yeah.
Even though Remus is the more mature one.
Yeah.
And the more parental one.
Right. Yeah, and he has the Weasleys too. I mean, I know that's kind of like, but obviously he felt a kinship with Sirius that he does not feel with
him. And there's no shame in what you are feeling, Harry. On the contrary, the fact that you can feel pain like this is your greatest strength. Again, Dumbledore, again, for all of Dumbledore's years of dealing with adolescence.
Yeah.
These seem like a few rookie mistakes.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then... we've got, my greatest strength is it, said Harry, his voice shaking as he stared out at the Quidditch Stadium, no longer seeing it. You haven't got a clue. You don't know. What don't I know? Asked Dumbledore calmly. And at this point, Harry's just like shaking. He's so pissed off.
Yeah. A little misdirected. But
And then Harry, suffering like this proves you are still a man. This pain is part of being human. And then caps lock Harry, then I don't want to be human.
I mean, neither do I, Harry.
This is like, you know, first time I really thought about it this way. This is like pulling some like Anakin Skywalker stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't want to be human. I don't want to feel the pain that is associated with, you know, caring about someone.
Right. Yeah. Goodness. Hello. what was I going to say? Yeah, I've had enough. I've seen enough. I want out. I want it to end. I mean, and like, we've all been in a situation where we feel similar to that, probably. I mean, I know I have.
Which, again, Dumbledore owns up to it. But yeah, it's like, I want out. I've, you know, had enough of this. Because he's like, yeah, I've been having to deal with this shit since I was 11.
Right, right. Yeah, this is, yeah, he's had to grow up really fast.
And Harry's screaming, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. He's basically destroying Dumbledore's possessions, all of his fancy little trinkets, his little compasses, astrolabes, whatever.
Yeah, and Dumbledore's kind of like, he's unfazed because he's Dumbledore. And then he's...
You know what this reminds me of? I didn't watch the whole miniseries, you know, the one where Amanda Seyfried plays, what was it, Elizabeth Holmes?
Oh, I haven't watched that.
The Dropout, that's what it's called. So there's a point where, like, basically she's breaking up, she's leaving, like, that Indian guy. I don't know if they were married or, you know, she's leaving him, and he gets so mad at her that he takes the box that she was carrying to the car, which had her, like, laptop and, like, other electronics, and just smashes it to the ground, and she just looks unfazed and is like, okay, bye. So this is, like, Dumbledore, like, all the things being destroyed. It's like, okay, bye.
I hope to one day be that out of my feels in some situation, to just be like, okay.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't care anymore. You do care. You care so much. You feel as though you will bleed to death with the pain of it. I don't, Harry. Yep. So you have now lost your mother, your father, and the closest thing to a parent you have ever known. Of course you care. You don't know how I feel. You standing there, you. And Harry tries to leave, but the door is locked still. And it's like, let me out. No, said Dumbledore. For a few seconds, they stare at each other. Let me out. So Harry said again, no. If you keep me here, if you don't let me, by all means, continue destroying my possessions. I dare say I have too many.
Yeah, so Dumbledore, that's just how freaking cool he is. He's like, yeah, you're just kind of help me out. Let's get rid of some of this shit. I love that.
I was just cleaning out my closet earlier today, because there are some things that I don't wear anymore. Partially, I don't wear anymore, and partially, they're a little too tight for me, because I've gone from a size 4 to a size 8.
It's the COVID-19. I don't even want to talk about myself.
Again. But anyway, yeah, so I have too many possessions for the size of my current condo. But yeah.
Yeah.
Books and fashion, my greatest weaknesses. But I did snag two really cute office, like, professional skirts for like $3.99 each.
That's awesome.
The good thing about being a size 8 is, again, I rarely shop like normal retail. It's always thrift stores, and there's much more selection in that larger size.
Yeah, yeah.
So I see it as a positive, but anyway.
Yeah. So he's like destroying his things, and Dumbledore's like, I don't care. I don't care what you have to say. Because he's like, he won't let him leave until he's like, you need to hear my info dump. So
yeah, you need to hear my info dump. And Dumbledore's like, it is my fault that Sirius died. Or I should say almost entirely my fault. If you are to attack me, as I know you are close to doing, I would like to have thoroughly earned it.
Good for him, man. Like, I don't know. That's, yeah.
Yep. So Harry finally sits his ass down.
Thank God. Goodness.
And so we don't have to go play by play. First we get the play by play of how the night, like, played out for everyone except for Harry, because we were with him. So when Harry and the kids left on the Thestrals, Snape went into the forest to try and find him.
Okay, yeah.
And realizing that he wasn't coming out of the forest, and it's like, oh shit, he like left. You know, Snape goes to Grimmauld Place to tell, you know, the Order members. Sirius there was there, obviously. Which, again, interesting. Again, we'll get to Creature in a minute, but Sirius was in fact there.
Yeah.
Remus was there, Tonks was there, and Moody was there. And so they're like, okay, the kid's gone off to London's Department of Mysteries. We all gotta go. And Snape told Sirius to stay put because Dumbledore wasn't there yet but Sirius is like, no, I'm not staying here. I'm gonna go help my godson. So he instructs Creature to be the messenger boy when Dumbledore shows up. Where Dumbledore was, we don't know.
Right.
Because again, he's been MIA since his badass explosion in his office escaping. They do it in the movie. It's done in a really cool way where he grabs onto Fox's, the Phoenix's tail, and he bursts into flames and just disappears.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
In a really badass way. But anyway, so they go to the Department of Mysteries. Snape goes back to the school to continue to scour the forest just in case. Dumbledore shows up at Grimmauld Place with Creature there, and Creature, as we find out, has, took a liberal interpretation of Sirius's order to get out, and has been shacking up at certain times with Narcissa Black, who is now Narcissa Malfoy, the wife of Lucius Malfoy. And Creature was able to give them, and by extension Bellatrix, when she was broken out of prison.
Right.
Yeah, so those two sisters. So in essence, magical, impediments that prevented Creature both being Sirius's house elf and still being technically bound to Sirius, and also bound by, not being able to give information or the Phoenix. He could give enough info to Bellatrix and Narcissa and be for them to concoct this scheme that we just need the best way to lure Harry Potter into the Department of Mysteries is to make it seem like we have Sirius.
Yeah, which, I mean, come on, that only makes sense. I think using Sirius as bait is pretty,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's also probably
the only sort of pertinent information that they can use, because anything more specific than that, Creature would not be at liberty to tell them. Not that he doesn't want to, but he's bound by all these magical enchantments and restrictions.
And just being a total asshole.
Yeah, so I tried to check he'd really taken Sirius. I went to Umbridge's office. I spoke to Creature in the fire, and he said Sirius wasn't there. He said he'd gone. Creature lied. You are not his master. He could lie to you without even needing to punish himself. Creature intended for you to go to the Ministry of Magic.
Dick.
Yeah. So how do you feel, and Dumbledore goes on and is just like, Creature told me what happened. He was reluctant, but I know enough of legitimacy to get the truth out of him. And Dumbledore is like, Creature is the result of what wizards have made him. So how do you feel about, first of all, Creature's betrayal? And again, Dumbledore not seeming all that surprised or even mad about it.
I think that, you always knew Creature was up to something, because he was just kind of he okay, this guy's going to be a problem, but we don't know how. And now we know how he was going to be a problem. Pretty big problem. but as far as Dumbledore's logic with how he I feel like I'm treading in dangerous territory because I'm not going to make here's what I'll say without sticking my foot in it. I think Dumbledore has a view of the world that I wish more people would adopt, because yes, some people, I'm not talking about kind of racial, I'm just talking about people being people. And I know Creature is kind of not a person, but
a being,
an entity. I'm walking this earth now. Anyway, yes, he's a living, breathing thing. We're all just things. I guess it's kind of nature, nurture, whatever. There's a lot that you could probably do with that. But what I will say, kind of overall, is Dumbledore's view of the world is one that I think the world would be a much more peaceful place, in some regards.
it speaks to the testament of, like, again, personal histories and grievances, because even Sirius wasn't involved in, like, any sort of the Dobby plot lines, but when they were in the cave eating the chicken, you know, Sirius was very interested in Hermione's, you know, focus on the weird way that Crouch just fired his house elf Winky.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Sirius was very in tune to that. And even Sirius told Ron, when Ron was being dismissive of Hermione's, like, passion for house elves, and Sirius tells Ron straight out, she's got the read of Crouch better than you, Ron. If you want to see what a man is like, take a look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals. So, on general principle, for coming from a pureblood family, Sirius was substantially more in tune to, like, house elf stuff than probably most wizards of his, you know, of his heritage and his background. But still, yeah, that wasn't enough for him to get over his very specific, you know, history with Creature, who just represented everything he hated about his family.
Right. That's, yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of some advice that I got from somebody a long time ago that said, some people are just going to not like you because they had an experience with somebody in their past that you might remind them of. And that's always, like, I try to remember that when somebody's mm-hmm. not nice to me. I'm like, oh, no. They were upset with a pale brunette at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And Harry's just like, and Hermione kept telling us to be nice to him. She was quite right, Harry. I warned Sirius when we adopted number 12 Grimmauld Place as our headquarters that Creature must be treated with kindness and respect. I also told him that Creature could be dangerous to us. I don't think that Sirius took me very seriously. I think that's the only person who's ever used Sirius and seriously in the same sentence like that.
He can get away with
it. Or that he ever saw Creature as a being with feeling as acute as a human's.
Again, Dumbledore's got the right approach. I mean, like, what is that old saying? You kill more flies with honey?
You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
You kill more flies. Listen to me. Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. And that can be, yeah. I mean, shoot, I've got Southern family, you know, like, so I know that that can be used as kind of a knife itself. But that's kind of the point. Like, if they were just super sweet to Creature, things might have turned out a little differently. Sure, he's bitter about things, and it might have taken a long time to warm him up. But if they were going to play that game kind of out of their emotions,
yeah,
might have been a better way.
I'm conflicted with some of that because, again, on general principle, of course, I like, you know, the idea of, you know, and tend to most of the time prescribe to, again, that, you know, I saw my mom basically, you know, so many times basically be a Karen before Karen was a term. Okay. To, you know, describe a woman throwing a fit in a store or restaurant. I think my mom did that so many times. And I can't even say with certainty if it wasn't always, like, justified, just that obviously as a kid it embarrassed me. And so when I saw that, I took the approach of, like, I want to be nice to people because isn't it more logical that people would be more inclined to help me if I'm nice and not being prickly? But as I've learned that life is complicated, unfortunately, there are some situations where the only way to get things done is to be the squeaky wheel and know that you're not going to leave someone alone until they take care of, you know, until they do something, that being nice is interpreted as just walking all over you.
Yeah, it's like you have to change your position with dependent on the other player, which, yeah.
Yeah. My personal opinion is, I don't think, with Sirius being the person that Creature was bound to and not liking, and no way to, like, undo that or switch Creature, the ownership of Creature, to anyone else, you know, I don't think they would have had enough time to, again, convert Creature with kindness. All they could have done is just, you know, Sirius just could have taken more seriously and been more, like, cognizant of his words with Creature to make sure that there was no room for interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to speculate with that. But mm-hmm. As a general rule, like, I kind of think, just don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That's a good, to me.
And then we go to Snape. Yes. And it's like, you know, Snape just pretended to, like, "You're not talking about him, are you?" When I told Voldemort, he had seriously just sneered at me as usual. "Harry, you know that Professor Snape had no choice to pretend to not take you seriously in front of Dolores Umbridge. But as I have explained, he informed the Order. And it's like, Snape goaded Sirius about staying in the house. He made Sirius out to be a coward. Sirius was too much old and clever to have allowed such feeble taunts to hurt him," said Dumbledore. Dumbledore, that is a lie.
Yeah, well, and then doesn't he kind of say, and Snape was still, like, emotionally affected by that or whatever?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, Snape stopped giving me occlumency lessons. He threw me out of his office. "I am aware of it," said Dumbledore heavily. "I had already said that it was a mistake for me not to teach you myself, though I was sure at the time that nothing could have been more dangerous. Snape made it worse. My scar always hurt worse, you know. But I forget, another old man's mistake, that some wounds run too deep for healing. I thought Professor Snape could overcome his feelings about your father. I was wrong." Which is, Harry Brinks, "But that's okay, is it? It's okay for Snape to hate my dad, but it's not okay for Sirius to hate Creature," which, you know, Dumbledore's like, Sirius didn't hate Creature. It's like, basically, we have two situations of two people, Sirius with Creature and Snape with Harry, like, being unable to get over the past. And again, like, you know, Dumbledore clearly, for whatever reason, he says he trusts Snape, basically kind of giving that, again, you know, like, criticizing Sirius more for not being able to be more cognizant or nicer to Creature, and not really condemning Snape for behaving the same way. Because if there is one person I blame, if possibly more, if not the same as Dumbledore for this whole fiasco, it's Snape. Because yeah. Snape left Harry completely vulnerable.
Because he got into his feels about how he felt. I mean, yeah, I still don't think it's too bad that there was that kind of, like, it's too bad Snape didn't have some therapy before all this started. Because it really, I mean, Dumbledore's not wrong with his logic here for the reason he went about things that he, I don't think. I mean, I could understand why he made the decision he did.
Yeah, so anyway, but yeah, it is something to point out that, yeah, even like it doesn't, again, he's going on this, well, obviously Sirius is the one who's dead and like trying to explain all that happened, but Dumbledore doesn't seem to just, he says, he's just saying it was a mistake, but he's not criticizing Snape's refusal to take a direct order and teach Harry in the same way he's criticizing Sirius for leaving themselves vulnerable with Creature.
Yeah. I don't know. Complicated.
Yeah. So Sirius deserved what he got, did he? I did not say that, nor will you ever hear me say it. Sirius was not a cruel man. He was kind to themselves in general. He had no love for Creature because Creature was a living reminder of the home Sirius had hated. And again, yeah, he did hate it. People don't like being locked up. I was trying to keep Sirius alive. And then you did it to me all last summer, like keeping me locked up.
Yeah. So,
which is an interesting, especially since we've all gone through the collective trauma of the pandemic and lockdowns to varying lengths of time, depending on exactly where you are in restrictions. For a good majority of us, those lockdowns were a good 12 to 18 months.
If we took it seriously. Some people didn't.
Yes, pun intended. But yeah, so now more people are in a position to understand Sirius's restlessness, especially being cooped up in a place more or less by himself with, the question of how do you, with someone like Sirius, with his personality type, how do you balance physical safety with, you know, again, like, not that there wouldn't have been a certain level of risk, but I think allowing Sirius to go out in a very controlled, monitored way, you know, Sirius would have had the know-it-all to be like, okay, Harry went out there just because they thought I was there. I need to sit tight.
Yeah.
And if he had been allowed to go out and feel like useful in some capacity, that right. He would have had more command of himself to do that.
That's, yeah. Am I recording? My line's not moving on my side.
Yeah, it is. It's moving.
Okay. It is on. Okay. It's just frozen on mine. That's fine. I just was going to be like, oh, shoot. Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sirius could have had more control of himself if he had not been so cooped up and exasperated.
And then I guess, you know, kind of to what you said, we all know the experience of kind of being in a situation where we're trapped with not, you know, I mean, I said at the beginning of all this, just imagine if we didn't have the internet, you know, like mm-hmm. how just, and single people. And
that would have been a lot of trips to the library.
Yeah.
Or at least the library parking lot, because it was closed and curbside pickup.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, it would have. It would have.
Yeah. Thank God for kitties.
Yeah. Yes. Kitty company is good.
Yep. And so we transition from all the like nitty gritty of what happened and who screwed up and how badly it got screwed up and whose fault it was for screwing up. We go to the big reveal of the prophecy. What were your thoughts?
I wasn't super like blown away. I kind of felt like this was coming, because why the hell would Voldemort care about, you know, Harry? The bigger reveal for me was Neville Longbottom's kind of.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I've said a million times, I know he's important. I don't know why he's important. So, and, you know, Harry is just as kind of, you know, taken aback by that as well. I don't know how surprising it is to Harry that, like, Voldemort's his opposite and only one can survive. Like, I feel like there's kind of been that vibe through the whole thing. Has it been as kind of laid out there as clearly? No. But
yeah, well, right before we get to prophecy, we also get about like in the same thing, the whole reason Dumbledore sent, you know, Harry to live with his aunt is because by, you know, we already knew that by sacrificing herself to save him as a child, Lily Potter imparted a very powerful protection in her blood, and, you know, against, for Harry, and that charm, that powerful magic, extends to anyone who has that bloodline, meaning that by Harry staying with Aunt Petunia, like, literally Voldemort cannot, even though he has a body, he cannot just go knock on the Dursley's door and get Harry, because, like, there's the magical, like, enchantments will not allow that.
Yeah, and it's like a form of magic that Voldemort thinks is kind of BS too, right? Like old magic. And so I mean, that's good for Harry to hear. Like, it wasn't somebody just being like, it's your only family left, so you have to stay with them, because that never made
sense. It's a very interesting notion. You know, there's, again, with Sirius and his family, you know, the notion that, you know, your chosen family, you know, with the people who care about you. It's an interesting dynamic of that this ancient magic, again, this magic that Lily invoked was out of an act of love. And so it's just interesting that that magic is only restricted by bloodline, in the way that Petunia could take Harry in, but there's no love in it at all. It's purely like biological. So yeah. It's just interesting, the dynamic that this whole thing was triggered by, maybe in the notion of, like, literally Lily shedding her blood, maybe in that sort of way. But it's just an interesting dynamic, because of many themes, many things point towards, like, you know, it's not who you are, it's what you choose to be, and, like, choosing people to surround yourself with people who love you and support you. And yet this very ancient magic, which is considered love magic, is still can be applied with someone like Petunia, who clearly does not give a crap about Harry, and Harry says it. Yes, like, she doesn't love me, she doesn't give a damn, but she took you. She may have taken you grudgingly, furiously, unwillingly, bitterly, yet still she took you, and in doing so, she stealed this charm I placed upon you. Your mother's sacrifice made the bond of blood the strongest shield I could give you.
So this person has to be living. It's not like, because that's the thing I thought. I was like, could Harry carry, like, a little vial of her blood around, or...
No, yeah, it has to be living.
Oh. So if Aunt Petunia goes, good luck, Harry, pretty much.
Maybe. I don't know, with Dudley. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Blech. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, there's my future fan fiction. What if the Dursleys did not exist?
Yeah. Yeah, so we get that whole explanation of why Harry's been sent there all the time. It's not because, oh, it's just Harry's it's the only family. Like, there was a concrete purpose, you know,
right,
behind all the bullshit he had to go through.
Thank goodness. And that, again, yeah, that helps. Like, it's like, oh, okay, we weren't just being like sadists or whatever.
Yeah. And then we get into, again, the prophecy, which it's almost a humble brag. I cared about you too much.
Yeah.
again, just this sense of, you know, Harry first asked him, why was Voldemort after me, you know, in the Philosopher's Stone? And Dumbledore refused to tell him. And then second year also didn't tell him. Third year didn't tell him. Fourth year didn't tell him. And now we're at year five.
Yeah, and he was kind of been grappling with this. Like, what does he say? He came out of the maze and watched Cedric die, and I was kind of like, oh, maybe it's time. But, like, can we blame him for the first year being like, we're not going to say anything? Like, that's a little
high. By the third year, how can anyone predict that the Basilisk? By the third year, right, when there had been three instances of Harry having to deal with shit, Dumbledore should have been like, okay, I can't save this kid. I tried to give him some sense of normalcy. I can't give him that.
Right, right. You know, like,
that ship sailed a long time ago.
Right.
So exactly. I forgive it, but myself personally, I forgive it up until, like, the end of book three.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can understand his thought process, but maybe just slip him a note and be like,
which is why, you know, it's very poignant, the argument that Sirius and Molly have at the beginning of this book and how much to tell Harry, because if anything, it seems that Dumbledore was playing much more into a Molly Weasley type of thinking, where Sirius was just like, he's already gone through stuff. He's even gone through, like, more things than, like, Tonks, who is like a fully trained Auror. So we finally get, you know, the realization that the prophecy, the orb in the Department of Mysteries was just the record of it, where, you know, you said when you saw the label on the prophecy, it said, you know, CST or something, to, you know, Albus, you know, Wulfric, Percival, Brian, Dumbledore. So you immediately knew the initials that it was Dumbledore, but you didn't know who the ST was.
Yes, I did not know who the ST was. And now I know.
It's Sybil Trelawney.
Which is wild, because she's kind of silly, right? Like, this is super serious and she's silly.
But as we know, she gave a real prophecy in book three predicting Wormtail's escape.
She did. Yes, she
so
did.
So she is capable of these ones, but she, like, goes into a trance and, like, she doesn't remember it. And so we get this little image of, like, kind of Trelawney in the pensive, and she's, like, the one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord approaches, born to those who have thrice defied him, born as the seventh month dies, and the Dark Lord will mark him as his equal, but he will have powers the Dark Lord knows not, and either must die at the hands of the other, for neither can live while the other survives. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord will be born as the seventh month dies.
Yeah, so pretty obviously Harry, but again, like I said, I feel like it's been hinted, but then the complexity that Dumbledore shares is interesting.
It's an interesting, because prophecies is one of my least favorite tropes in fantasy, because in so many ways I think it's a cop-out. I appreciate the way Harry the writer explains this prophecy, because it kind of shows the complexity of, if anything, again, this could have applied to two boys. It could have been Harry or it could have been Neville, because Neville's parents also, you know, Neville fulfilled the description as well.
Right, right.
And Dumbledore makes the note of, notice Harry, that he did not pick the pure blood boy, who, according to his creed, is the only type of wizard being or knowing, but the half-blood, like himself.
Yeah. I don't know. Voldemort's got some funny ideas.
Yeah, well, I think it's counterintuitive, but it makes sense, because I think in Harry, you know, being a half-blood, like Voldemort with all his daddy issues of coming into this world as a half-blood, and his baggage of, like, his father didn't want him, but how dare his father not want him? He was a worthless muggle, blah, blah, blah. So I think in many ways he saw Harry as kind of like him, where he's going to come into this world being very, like, jaded and, you know, jaded and just feeding into power the way he kind of grasped at power to try and, you know, get a leg up in this society. Whereas with the pure blood, he feel like the pure blood won't have these problems and won't seek power the way we half bloods have, you know, he thinks that all half bloods have to seek power. you know, in this way, in this prejudiced society.
Yeah, that, I mean, that does make sense. That makes better sense.
Mm-hmm. So, but the whole reason Voldemort was after the prophecy in the first place is that one of Voldemort's little Death Eaters or followers only heard part of the prophecy and therefore did not, like, basically from the part of, but he will have, he will have powers the Dark Lord knows not. Basically, that's all the, like, messenger heard, and that's all Voldemort ever heard. So he was determined to try and figure out what is the part of the prophecy that I missed. And, well, Dumbledore's like, this is the weapon he's been looking for, the knowledge of how to destroy you.
I mean, damn. Pretty
I remember intense. reading this the first time. Obviously, it's very hard to, like, recall, like, original readings, you know, because I read these, like, so long ago as a teenager. But I was so convinced that the weapon was going to be a person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I was going to be like, is, like, the weapon, like, Tonks and her crazy shape-shifting ability or, like, something like that? But no.
No.
So then it's, you know, kind of finally finished up when it's like, so basically one of us has got to kill the other in the end. Yes, said Dumbledore. But
let's get this party started, right? Let's get rid of Voldemort.
And totally random. Don't.
Yeah.
I feel I owe you another explanation, Harry. You may perhaps have wondered why I never chose you as a prefect. I must confess that I'd rather thought you had enough responsibility to be going on with.
And then, what is it? Harry looked up at him and saw a tear trickling down Dumbledore's face into his long silver beard. And this is the type of shit that is kind of gutting when you, because it's like all this heavy, heavy things. And all Dumbledore is like, I can't let you be a normal kid, you know, as normal as a wizarding kid is, because you have the biggest bad, like, coming at you. So yeah, this is a pretty sweet, sad little moment there.
Yep. And thus we end chapter 37 and chapter 38. The second war begins.
Dun, dun, dun.
Starts off with a Daily Prophet article documenting the return of Lord Voldemort. And, you know, meanwhile, the boy who lived, there you are, Harry, I knew they'd drag you in it somehow. You're the boy who lived again, not the crazy guy anymore.
Right, yeah. Funny how that stuff changes, that it makes you think of a certain celebrity case going on right now.
Which,
like,
one?
I was thinking of, like, the Johnny Depp trial. I remember people really villainized Johnny Depp, and then the trial happened, and everybody's like, oh, we love Johnny Depp again. So, yeah. I mean, I think everybody's wrong in that situation, but that's the public's reaction has been interesting.
Yeah, both wrong, but Amber way wrong. I had to, not that I was, like, deep in it, but I had to stop it because seeing Amber Heard is just so triggering. And I'm like, you are just like my husband's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, she's something else. But I just think that's interesting, you know, because when I think that article came out, everybody was very upset with Johnny Depp. I mean, that's what the whole lawsuit was about, that he lost a
he lost pirates. Right? He lost pirates. He lost Fantastic Beasts.
Right.
He lost tons of shit.
Right. Yeah. All because of just, you know, somebody's,
like, someone not being like, okay, we both did bad stuff, let's just go our separate ways.
Yeah. Just shut the hell up, everybody. That's my advice. But anyway, I don't know. I'm a Scorpio.
Yeah. So we've got, they're reading this in the hospital wing because Hermione seems to have been the one that took the most damage. Again,
right.
But she's drinking like 10 potions a day.
Yeah, goodness.
To, like, fix her up.
And then this was very strange to me. They were talking about Ron, and there were still deep welts on his forearms where the brain's tentacles had wrapped around him, like a leech or something, I guess, or not.
Yeah, and even Madame Pomfrey saying that thoughts were some of the deepest scars that could be inflicted.
That's pretty creepy.
That's pretty pretty creepy, but also pretty darn cool. Again, manifesting mental harm. In this magical way.
Yeah.
And then it's like, centaurs, whose divination teacher now? Is Frenzy staying? He's got to. The other centaurs won't take him back. It's looked like he and Trelawney are both going to teach, said Ginny.
That'll be interesting.
Yep. And what's interesting is, like, mind you, the whole subject's useless. if you ask me, frenzy isn't a lot better. How can you say that, Hermione demanded, after we just found out there are real prophecies? So now Hermione's on board with divination.
Of course. But she's just one of those people that has to see, like, it has to see it in order to believe it.
Yeah, she just has to see this huge, huge shelves of sparkly blue orbs.
Right. So we're saying that Hermione would have been a COVID denier. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. She definitely would not have been.
Yeah. And we learn Harry has not yet disclosed the fact that he got the prophecy from Dumbledore because he doesn't want to admit it to his friends that he may have, that he has to be killed or he has to kill or be killed.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy to like share with people. So
Harry gets to a point where he goes, I lost my place.
I think we're to Luna's, like, yeah.
Yep. And then, well, Luna was there and she's like, yeah, because basically it was like for a like detailed interview with Harry Potter, see page whatever. And it's just the same article that they, you know, that Luna's father sold it to the Daily Prophet.
Right. Yeah. Good for him.
And so now they're going on a holiday in Sweden to go hunt Crumblehorn Snorkax.
Of course. God, Luna, quirky gal.
Oh, and then we realize also next to them in the hospital wing is Umbridge.
Yes. This was a little dark. I could not read this in the way that I probably, based on what you told me, kind of.
Oh, like, yeah, about this, the traditional lore around centaurs.
I was like, I don't like this. I don't like Dolores, but like. So I was just like, okay, let's just keep moving when I read that.
Yeah, and it's like, and Ron is just like, she shows forms of life when you do this, and he makes like fake hoofbeat noises, and she just freaks out.
That was the word. Okay, as if I forget what you told me about centaurs, I was like, all right, that's pretty. I mean, she deserves some goading because she's a pain in the ass.
And also, it's an especially weird. Because again, because Parvati and Lavender were like, you know, having like celebrity crush on Ferenczi. So it's like, yeah. So like there's this whole like sexual energy that's surrounds centaurs, particularly because also that the horse symbolically, both the horse and the bull are very strong symbols in ancient civilizations of male virility.
Ugh. Yuck. That's how I have to say about all of that. That's pretty wild.
And so Harry goes, well, first, I think he's on his way to Hagrid's and he gets accosted by Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle.
Oh, yeah. This.
Which Malfoy is pissed is because, you know, the pristine reputation of the Malfoys has been tarnished because now Lucius Malfoy is in Azkaban. He was one of the Death Eaters that was apprehended.
Yeah. Which.
Which, again, up till this point, Lucius was able to keep his good name in polite society by saying that he had been a victim of the Imperius Curse.
Oh, yeah.
In the first round of the war in the 70s. So that's how he was able to stay out of trouble. Where now, everyone knows, it's been sprinkled in this book, like, when it's like, oh, like, that's why Lucius' Imperius Curse didn't work. Like, it's kind of implied, and it's definitely in my headcanon, that Lucius Malfoy is, if not the best, one of the best casters of the Imperius Curse in the entirety of Britain.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway. So Draco Malfoy is really pissed off about that. And is like, you think you're such a big man, Potter? You wait, I'll have you. You can't land my father in prison. I thought I just had. The Dementors have left Azkaban. Dad and the others will be out in no time. Yeah, I suspect they will, said Harry. Still, at least everyone knows what scumbags they are now.
That's true. I mean, that's something.
Yep. And Harry's like literally about to curse Malfoy and he hears Potter and it's Snape emerged from the staircase. Harry felt a great rush of hatred beyond anything he'd felt towards Malfoy. Whatever Dumbledore said, he would never forgive Snape. Never.
Can't really blame him.
Which again, the whole thing of I do not blame Harry at all for not going to Snape when he saw his vision because what the hell has Snape done
Nothing to build trust with him other than his half-assed occlumency lessons.
Half-assed occlumency. And even if it were true, Snape has shown that he puts his grievances with, you know, Harry's dad and all the other marauders before his quote unquote, you know, allegiance as a quote unquote good guy, even though he's an asshole. Right. So it's like, even if Harry has every reason to be suspicious that that Snape would not have acted upon that information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing, Potter? Said Snape coldly. I'm trying to decide what curse to use on Malfoy, sir.
Yeah, he's out of fucks at this point. Harry yeah, is.
No more fucks to give. No. And then, I see, there's no longer any points left in the Gryffindor hourglass to take away. In that case, Potter, we'll simply have to add some more, said McGonagall.
Yeah, goodness, McGonagall, she's ready to poke yeah. a bear here.
Yeah, she's come. She gives 50 points to each of the kids who ran off to the Department of Mysteries, like suborning. Yeah. Escape from school, breaking and entering into a government facility.
You know, sometimes. You
just right gotta... on. Right. And then, so yeah, 54 Ginny, Ron, Hermione, Harry, and Miss Lovegood. And Neville.
Yes. And Luna and Ravenclaw, right?
Yep. And then McGonagall shoves her suitcase into like Crabbe or Goyle's arms and it's like, take this to my office. You're my bellboys now.
Good, because those guys are the worst. So.
Yep. And so Harry evades punishment from Snape, and he ducks out and goes on to Hagrid's cabin.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about this.
All right, Harry. Come in, come in. We'll have a cup of dandelion juice. Have you ever had dandelion juice? I have not.
No, me neither.
I feel like that's something that there should be a cottagecore tutorial for that.
You should make one. If there's not.
You know what? Hagrid needs his own cottagecore Instagram or TikTok.
Oh my gosh.
With yeah. his rock cakes and everything.
That would probably be super fun to look
that,
at.
Like, that needs to be someone's blog, like Hagrid's cottagecore.
Yes, it does, for sure.
Yep, and his gardening, all his gardening with his, like, crazy ass magical Venus flytraps that eat weasels.
Yeah. scary.
Yep. And it's like, so we find out that since Hagrid fled Hogwarts, he was hiding up in the mountains. The same place where Sirius was eating was with the chicken.
Oh my goodness.
But of course, immediate talk of Sirius, Harry starts to shut down.
Yeah.
And Hagrid tries to say to Harry, look, I knew Sirius longer than you did. He died in battle and that's the way he'd have wanted to go. He didn't want to go at all, said Harry angrily. Yeah, Hagrid bowed things. His great shaggy head. No, I don't reckon he did, but still, Harry, he was never one to sit around at home and let other people do the fighting. He couldn't have lived with himself if he hadn't gone to help.
Yeah, that's kind of probably, you understand what he's trying to say, but probably not the right time to start talking like that.
No, not, still too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he gets a, what is it happens? Ron and Hermione left the hospital wing. Professor Umbridge leaves Hogwarts, being whacked on the head by Peeves with a stick. And McGonagall's like, she would have done it too, but Peeves had taken her walking stick.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This one, Harry goes into the dormitory and he finds his gift from Sirius. Use it if you need me, all right? And this is the gift that Harry did not touch, didn't even open, because he was so determined that he was not going to give Sirius any excuse to, like, come up to Hogwarts to read Snape the Riot Act. He's like, I don't care what Snape does to me, like, I'll handle it myself. So he did not open this present because he was so adamant about, I'm not going to be the reason that Sirius leaves his, you know, place of safety. But we find, again, the ultimate, like, Greek, typical, like, right. super Greek tragic fashion, that this is a two-way mirror. I've got the other. If you need to speak to me, just say my name into it, and you'll appear in my mirror, and I'll be able to talk in yours. James and I used to do this when we were in separate detentions. So basically a type of FaceTime.
This stuff drives me nuts. Like, in, you know, this is a trope, and especially in, like, rom-coms, where it's, like,
the miscommunication or misunderstanding.
Yeah, the misunderstanding thing. Oh, sometimes that drives me nuts. But this time it just kind of breaks your heart, because you're like, oh God, he could have, you know, because there's probably an element of Sirius being like, well, he's never contacting me, you know? So when, you know, when he was alive.
Harry tries it. Of course, it doesn't work. Right. And, but it's the only issue I have with this is there's a, obviously when Harry first speaks to Sirius in the fire in Umbridge's office, he had the mirror in his possession. And then he goes to talk to Sirius. So the only possible, like, sort of, Sirius, you idiot, Sirius doesn't say to Harry, like, why are you talking to me in the fireplace? Use the goddamn mirror.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. Very tragic.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so yeah, super Greek tragedy, ironic. And again, the whole reason he didn't even touch it is because he didn't want to lure Sirius out. But by not touching it, that's exactly what ended up happening. Because life is a bitch like that.
It really is. It really is.
But then Harry gets an idea and goes and has a little chat with nearly headless Nick. And what did you think of this interaction and the sort of a little bit of world building in the nature of how ghosts work in this world?
Well, I love ghosts. We know that. But this just kind of like, I just felt like the knife was inserted and then it's been twisted and then this kind of twisted it again. Because I was just like, oh, I didn't even think about this being a possibility. And then, you know, Nick gives the explanation of how this works. And then that the fact that it's like, if I'm understanding correctly, it's kind of a choice if you kind of want to, if you're a wizard.
Yeah, if you're a wizard, it's, you basically have kind of a choice. If you're too much of a chicken shit to go to the beyond, then your soul kind of, again, you kind of stay as a ghost. So in essence, Nick doesn't know anything more about the afterlife than any of the living people.
He's just
like, he's basically like, it's not like there's a part of him or part of his soul or whatever that's in the beyond and there's just an imprint. Like, literally all that Nick was in his essence of his spirit and soul is stuck on Earth now. Like, it's never going beyond. And Nick kind of gives the impression that he regrets this choice.
I can understand why.
And it's like, just, and it's ironic because Nick, nearly headless Nick, is the Gryffindor ghost of bravery and stuff. And so.
Oh, yeah.
That's but funny. Anyway, so yeah. So it's, of all the ghosts that are, it seems to be a very minority that choose to be ghosts. Most just, you know, go to the beyond.
Yeah. As we find out, well, so that was interesting. And, you know, Nick says, like, no, Sirius, that he's not gonna be here.
Yeah, because Nick would have known Sirius when Sirius was a teenager at Hogwarts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I know nothing of the secrets of death, Harry, for I chose my feeble imitation of life instead. I believe learned wizards study the matter in the Department of Mysteries. Don't talk to me about that place!
Oh my god, chill.
So after he gets, you know, disappointed by Nick, who should show up but Luna? And Luna's the only one who seems to make him feel better.
In her way, which I can understand. Like, you know, I know, understand she's a divisive character, and but I like her. She's weird.
Yeah. So first he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm putting up signs. People have taken my possessions. An odd feeling rose in Harry, an emotion quite different from the anger and grief. It was a few moments before he realized he was feeling sorry for Luna. How come people hide your stuff? Oh, well, I think they think I'm a bit odd, you know. Some people call me Loony Lovegood, actually. Which, again, it's, you know, this is question. Not that I think that Luna's being, like, deceptive in any way or, like, two-faced. But I just wonder how much of being bullied and stuff like that, how much of that genuinely affects her. Like, even though she doesn't show it, like, how often is she crying herself to sleep because she doesn't have friends? Not that it's gonna tempt her, like, to change who she is, and she's convicted in who she is and not wanting to change. But still, does that make her feel sad from time to time?
Yeah, I have a couple other thoughts about Luna, but I'm not gonna say I'm on a recording. So I just had some questions just based on some other things, but.
Yep, and then Harry realizes that Luna can also see Thestrals, and so she must have known death. And Harry asks, and it's like, it was my mother. She was an extraordinary witch, and she loved to, but she did like to experiment, and one of her